I don't know if you saw this, but a couple of weeks ago in China, a pair of lions escaped at a circus, sending just hundreds of terrified spectators fleeing for their lives. And one of them they caught before it got out of the tent, but the other one, sure enough, it made it outside, and it was just roaming through the car park. Fortunately, they were able to catch them before they could hurt anyone. But for some reason, that circus has been temporarily closed for business. Apart from the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz, well, I happen to think that lions are pretty intimidating. So as you know, lions, they are part of the cat family, and they like to eat peas and carrots. No, they're definitely carnivores. They will hunt animals as small as a rabbit or as large as a buffalo, and sometimes the pride of lions, they'll even take on a small elephant. Well, lions, they can get up to 600 pounds, and they can run over 35 miles an hour, and some people argue that it's up to 50 miles per hour in short bursts. Now, have you ever been at the zoo, and you're close to the large cats section, and you heard a lion roar? Well, it's quite an experience. A lion's roar can be heard up to 5 miles away. Well, if you'd like to follow along this morning, I'll be turning in your Bible, cell phone, or tablet back to the book of Daniel. So we're continuing our series here. Today we're going to be in chapter 6. And this is one of those stories you probably remember learning about as a little kid in Sunday school. Maybe you even sang about it. But it's not really a children's story. Now, its lessons are for adults. Well, as usual, we need to start with some background. See, by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, we find that Daniel, he had seen and been through more than most. He saw the fall of his nation to the Babylonians. He was deported from out of the promised land and sent to Babylon. He was chosen, all right, along with some other young men, to serve in the king's court. He made it through his resolve not to eat the king's choice food, which it would have defiled an Israelite. He interpreted the king's dream and was promoted to a very high position. His friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they stood up for their faith and were rescued from the fiery furnace. He saw the king cursed with lycanthropy, thinking that he was an animal because of his arrogance. He interpreted the literal writing on the wall for another king, which got him yet another promotion. He saw the armies of Cyrus the Persian conquer the city, and according to Herodotus, by lowering the Euphrates and going under the wall, who then gave it to Darius the Mede to rule over, and that's the guy whose identity the scholars they like to argue about is and debate. As rulers, they often had more than one name. Now, you'll find that many of the drawings of this event in chapter 6, they make Daniel out to be a young man. But Daniel was probably between 16 and 20 when he was captured and brought to Babylon in 605 BC. That would mean that he was 82 to 86 years old at the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire, which came about 66 years later in 539 BC. And so he's actually in his 80s at the time. So Daniel is a good example of outward aging not causing an inward decline and showing the value of elderly people in the service of God. Well, the context is more about persecution, but 2 Corinthians 4:16, it makes the point, though our outer person is decaying, yet our inner person is being renewed day by day. And I think Daniel exemplified that. All right, so first, we've got Daniel's dilemma. I'm going to just start here by reading verses 1 through 3. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. And so we can see that Daniel, he continued to serve as a government official even after the Medes and Persians took over Babylon. Now, satrap or satrap, it just means protector of the kingdom. It's kind of like a governor over a province. And suffer loss, probably speaking of the tax money. So, Daniel, or he became one of these three commissioners who were responsible to the king for what the satraps did. Now, this is the third time that we find Daniel being promoted, okay, under Nebuchadnezzar, under Belshazzar, now under Darius. It kind of reminds me of Joseph in the book of Genesis, who kept getting promotions wherever he went. And it seems to have been for similar reasons. Well, you'll notice that his success, it was not due to his shrewd, crafty, manipulative political scheming. All right, it was due to his extraordinary spirit, proving that someone can be successful in business and politics without compromising character. Now, I don't know if extraordinary spirit, if that's referring to his wisdom, maybe the fact that God gave him the ability to interpret dreams, or if it's speaking of his attitude and disposition. You know, his outlook was not one of complaints and pessimism, but it was positive and thoughtful. Now, some people think it was because of his honesty and integrity. Now, I suspect it included all of that. And whatever it was, it caused Darius and the others to say, I want that guy on my team. All right, so let's think about this. Daniel, he was in exile. All right, he has spent most of his life in exile, away from his home country, away from his family, and he's in the midst of constant pagan influence, and yet he still had an extraordinary spirit. I know so many people who blame the way they are on their upbringing. I'm this way because of what my parents did. I can't help it. You know, I do this because of what happened to me as a child, and so forth. Well, it always brings to my mind, and I've mentioned him before, my friend when I was in junior high. So the guy, he just had dreadful parents who treated him like dirt, and they wouldn't let him go to church with me, even though he wanted to, and he also had siblings, both younger and older, who were dreadful. I mean, they were in and out of juvenile hall. And anyway, he was in the midst of all that. And yet, he was one of the nicest guys I have ever met. And he acted nothing like the rest of them. You see, we all have free choice and the ability to shape our actions and attitudes. All right, so what can we learn from this? Bloom where you are planted. Play the cards you were dealt. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Turn the stumbling blocks into stepping stones. When the waves of life start rolling in, go surfing. You know, instead of letting them drown you, let them move you forward. We see some great examples of this in Scripture. Like, well, with Joseph and Samuel and Esther. And if you think about it, many of those that we consider to be great men and women of history were not dealt the best cards. See, things are not always the way we want them to be. We can lie there and whine about it, using it as an excuse for bad behavior, or we can get up and do something about it like Daniel and many others. And so Daniel, he performed as well under King Darius as he would have under King David. He was going to do his best no matter what. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord, rather than for men. All right, let's continue reading verses 4 through 5. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful. And no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, we will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. And so sadly, as it often happens, right, jealousy developed. And it probably didn't help that he was a foreigner. And it also may have had something to do with his honesty and integrity, which they acknowledged. This is Josephus, the first century Jewish historian. In his Antiquities of the Jews, he said that Daniel was, quote, above all the temptations of money and despised bribery. So it might have made them uncomfortable that he wasn't involved in the underhanded aspects of politics as they were. You see, people with integrity, people who are striving to live righteously, will sadly be disliked and even hated by some. That's just something you need to keep in mind. And for Christians, we're told in 2 Timothy 3:12, indeed, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Now, speaking of jealousy, I'm reminded of James 3:16. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. I mean, these are things that are certainly not to be found among God's people. Be very careful with jealousy and envy. I mean, there's a good reason why God told the Israelites not to covet in the 10th commandment. A lot of trouble in this life comes from someone's envy. I mean, think of Cain and Abel. Think of Joseph and his brothers. Think of Saul and David. Think of the religious rulers and Jesus. As Matthew 27:18, it says of Pilate, for he knew that because of envy they had handed him over, referring to Jesus. They could have said, you know, Daniel, he's such a good example. I'm going to try to emulate his example of excellence and integrity. But sadly, that didn't even enter their minds. It is a pitiful condition when the only way you can advance yourself is by denigrating others. Well, the problem was that no one could dig up any dirt on Daniel. I mean, the muckrakers are working overtime, but they're just coming up empty. They couldn't even say, you know, that Daniel, O king, well, there were two times last week when he came in 5 minutes late to work. And that is just wrong. Oh, no respect. I mean, they couldn't even say that. What an example. See, Daniel, he was faithful to the king. He was faithful to his job. However, he was also faithful to God. And so that's what they figured they could use. They knew that Daniel, if he was forced to choose between the law of the Medes and Persians and the law of his God, well, you know, he would choose to obey God. All right, so let's read verses 6-9. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. It's a sad day when government interferes with religion. That's something we're seeing more and more in our country. And there may come a day when many of my sermons will be considered hate speech. You know, I'd be in danger of a fine, maybe even prison, simply because I spoke against sin. Now, petition, all right, that's referring to a prayer of request. And there have been many cultures throughout time where they thought of their kings as a god, or at least some kind of, in some way, divine. And that really sounds weird to Americans, but it's certainly a fact of history. And so you'll notice that they appealed to Darius's ego here. They proposed this decree under their great, you know, the guise of their great respect for their king, using flattery to manipulate people. It's certainly nothing new. It's a fallacy that's often referred to as appeal to flattery or ad superbium. Children, they often learn it very young. Oh, I love you, Mommy. You're the best mommy in the world. May I have a cookie, you see? Well, unlike what they said, you know, it wasn't all the officials and governors, because Daniel was one of them. They probably just consulted the ones that they knew would be in favor of such a decree. But people, okay, they often use this tactic as well. everyone agrees, or everyone believes, to try to bully someone into assent. Okay, they probably don't, not everyone, but even if they did, it doesn't automatically make it right. The consensus can and have been wrong many times. And like these guys, there can be ulterior motives. There is a reason why appealing to the majority is called the ad populum or bandwagon fallacy. Now, we can see that the laws of the Medes and the Persians was unchangeable, even for a king. We find that in the book of Esther as well. That's an odd rule, because laws made by man, they definitely need to be repealed from time to time. And I guess it would have been considered improper for a king to admit that he had signed a faulty law, or maybe he was to keep a king from making rash and impulsive laws. Well, it seems that the Babylonians, or at least Nebuchadnezzar, well, they liked to burn people alive, as we saw with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the Persians, no, they like to throw people into lions' dens. And I read that they would capture lions and put them in cages or pits for this very purpose. It's pretty barbaric, but I'm sure that that threat kept a lot of people in line. See, I don't know about you. I don't know what your list is of terrifying deaths, but being eaten by lions, that's pretty high on my list. It's right up there with impaled by a swordfish and beaten to death by a clown, you know, those things. Okay, I'm just kidding. Next, Daniel's devotion. All right, let's read verses 10 and 11. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Okay, verse 10 says, as he had been doing previously. He had a regular and consistent prayer life. There are too many people who treat prayer like one of those boxes with a break glass in case of emergency. We're told in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17 to pray without ceasing. So that means we're to make prayer a great part of our lives. Like Daniel, do we maintain a good habit of frequent prayers? And we can see that, okay, he's not just asking for things, but giving thanks. Colossians 4:2, it says, devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving. According to the Bible, ingratitude is very displeasing to God. And it makes sense. So how do you feel about someone who's always asking you for things, or someone you're always doing things for, but, well, they never thank you. They just act like you owe it to them. And it may be easy to be thankful when everything is going well and when, you know, everything's coming up roses. But what about when it's difficult? See, again, Daniel, he's in exile. Even though we may be going through the ringer, there are always things that we can be thankful for. Now, hundreds of years earlier, King Solomon had anticipated that God's people would mess up like this, that they would rebel against God and they'd be taken as captives to a distant land. And praying toward Jerusalem, that's what Solomon said to do in 1 Kings 8 when dedicating the temple. He prayed, if they return to you with all their hearts and with all their soul in the land of their enemies who have taken them captive, and pray to you toward their land, which you have given to their fathers, the city which you have chosen, and the house which I have built for your name, then hear their prayer and their supplication in heaven, your dwelling place, and maintain their cause. Well, you'll notice here that Daniel knew about the law. God has always commanded that his people follow the laws of the land. For Christians, we find passages like Romans 13, Titus 3, 1 Peter 2. However, there is one notable exception. The only time we are to disobey the laws of the land is when they come in conflict with the laws of God. you remember the apostles, as they replied in Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men. Since it was contrary to the law of Moses, they would not eat certain unclean foods, Daniel 1. They would not worship an idol, Daniel 3. And Daniel would not stop praying to God, Daniel 6. But even in their disobedience, you'll notice that they were respectful. They acknowledged and they submitted to the king's authority to punish them, even put them to death, if that's what he decided to do. And yes, they stood their ground, but they were not rude, confrontational, or rebellious. They obeyed everything else. But you talk about a test. It's been said, our true faithfulness surfaces in a crisis. It is very easy to do and to say what is right when there are no consequences. And Daniel, he could have very easily rationalized, well, it's just 30 days. Surely God won't mind. Or, well, I ought to show some gratitude to Darius. He's been really good to me. Or, well, it's just a bit of self-preservation. I'm more useful to God alive, and the rationalizations can go on and on. I wonder what mine would have been. But Daniel, he made the decision to not change his actions, nor even to try to hide them. Because some people, they're like, why didn't he at least close or cover up the window? But I suspect he had come to the conclusion that it would have been a compromise. And we find many passages like 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. You know, as Paul said about a certain situation in Galatians 2, but we did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour. We may not be threatened with a lion's den, but as I mentioned last week, we are threatened at times with a loss of popularity, position, pay, personal relationships. And in some circumstances, all right, we may even be threatened with committing a hate crime when standing against sin. And so will you determine in advance that you will be faithful to God regardless of the consequences? You see, a prior determination makes that choice a lot easier if and when the challenge comes. And so Daniel, his eyes were fixed on Jerusalem. Our eyes are to be fixed somewhere as well. Our eyes are to be fixed on Jesus. Hebrews 12, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. Now, when I read verse 11, I can't help but think of the VeggieTales version of this. They throw the door open and enthusiastically yell, aha! But the door just bounces back closed on their faces. And so they throw it open again, aha! I mean, it was obviously a setup. Well, let's continue reading verses 12 through 15. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, the statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king. Daniel, who was one of those exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. And as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. All right, you may have noticed how they didn't refer to Daniel as their fellow administrator, but as an exile from Judah. Now, this might lead to the idea that their antagonism was partly based on prejudice. That Christian from Missouri. All right, this is a tactic that's sometimes referred to as loaded words or question-begging epithet. And it's using biased or emotional language to try to persuade others to accept a position. So, because Darius had signed this foolish, egotistical decree, an innocent man whom he highly regarded was to be put to death. Okay, his most efficient, trustworthy, and loyal commissioner. And like Darius, I have found that I often regret the decisions that I've made purely from the standpoint of my ego. All right, so that brings us to Daniel's deliverance. Let's read verses 16 through 18. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. No entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Okay, so notice how he said, constantly serve. Okay, he'd say it again in verse 20. Now I think we all need to ask ourselves, could that be said about me? Too many people, they only serve God when it's convenient. Now, these are pretty remarkable words for a pagan king, but it could be translated as in the NIV, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." See, his restless night showed that he wasn't so sure about that. Daniel, he's most likely cat chow. And so Darius, he spent the night, well, probably pacing like a lion. All right, looking at verse 17. You know, they'd usually seal something like this with clay or wax, something that could take the imprint of a signet ring and harden. And of course, that's to keep anyone from trying to mess with it, you know, trying to rescue him. Also, so no one could claim that Darius didn't follow his own law. So, can you imagine what it was like to be Daniel? Can you imagine being chucked into that den? And it makes me think of that guy who jumped into the tiger den at the Bronx Zoo back in 2012. He said it was so he could, quote, become one with the tiger. Okay, that was one well-fed tiger. And they rescued him very quickly. And yet, he still received bites and punctures on his arms, legs, shoulders, and back, as well as a broken shoulder, broken rib, broken ankle, broken pelvis, and a collapsed lung. That was just a cat playing with its food. Now, whether or not Daniel expected God to deliver him, that did not alter his faith. So I suspect he was preparing to die. You know, you remember from last week what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said in chapter 3. "If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up," period. All right, let's go now and read verses 19 through 23. "Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?' Then Daniel spoke to the king, 'O king, live forever.'" Now that was their common greeting. "My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime." Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he had trusted in his God. Now take note of that word, because, in verse 23. We are not always promised physical deliverance, but we are told in Romans 8:28, that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And it's been pointed out that God didn't deliver Daniel out of the lion's den, but helped him in it. We often want to be airlifted out of our troubles and trials. God doesn't always work that way. Daniel still had to deal with the stress and the smell and the stiff neck and back from spending the night in the lion's den. Well, he told Darius that he had been rescued by an angel, and then he reminded him that he had done nothing worthy of death. There are quite a few artists who have tried to depict this scene, and sometimes they actually get it right, and they make him an old man. Well, verse 24. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. See, that proved that the lions were definitely hungry. They would have been more than happy to eat Daniel if God hadn't sent his angel. Now, I assume it was just the other two commissioners, but it might have included some satraps. And so the king, he wanted to make a statement here. And so he had their wives and their children thrown in with them. That was a Persian custom for really bad crimes. It's not always this drastic, right? But many times others have to suffer for our actions. And that's an important thing to keep in mind as we're making our daily decisions. Now, we always like it, don't we, when justice is served. People get what's coming to them. They get their just desserts, as we say. I mean, how many books and movies are based on that theme? But it doesn't always happen in this lifetime. But we are told that there is going to be a judgment day at the end of time. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, Paul said, "We ourselves speak proudly of you among the churches of God for your perseverance and faith in the midst of all your persecutions and afflictions which you endure." This is a plain indication of God's righteous judgment so that you will be considered worthy of the kingdom of God for which indeed you are suffering. For after all, it is only just for God to repay with affliction those who afflict you and to give relief to you who are afflicted and to us as well when the Lord Jesus will be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire. All right, let's finish the chapter with verses 25 through 28. Then Darius the king wrote to all the people, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. All right, this was obviously due to Daniel's teachings. I mean, maybe Daniel showed him the scriptures where Cyrus's coming was predicted in Isaiah 44 and 45, and that the Babylonian kingdom was only going to last 70 years, as prophesied in Jeremiah. He might have told him about the 10 plagues, other things like that. I mean, Daniel had been a great influence on the king. And so those in the kingdom, they now had to respect the God of Daniel. And yeah, most of them probably just added the God of Israel to their long list of gods, you know, their pantheon. And, well, how long the decree lasted or people paid attention to it, I don't know, probably not very long. But, I don't know, it's kind of cool that it happened at all. And so Daniel, he finished out his life enjoying success in the reign of Darius and Cyrus, who ruled at the same time. You know, Darius is just ruling in Babylon. And so why was that the case with Daniel? Well, it's because of his extraordinary spirit and his obedience to God. And I'm reminded of 1 Peter chapter 3. "Let him who means to love life and see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. And let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it." And so the question for you and me, do we mean to love life and see good days? God was speaking with Ezekiel a contemporary of Daniel, in Ezekiel 14 and said, "If a country sins against me by committing unfaithfulness, and I stretch out my hand against it to destroy its supply of bread, send famine against it, and cut off from it both man and beast, even though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in its midst, by their own righteousness, they could only deliver themselves." And so God put Daniel up there with Noah and Job when giving a sample of righteous men. Well, after looking at Daniel chapter 6, I think I know why. So what was his secret? Well, he had an extraordinary spirit. He was a man of integrity. They couldn't dig up any dirt on him. He had a consistent prayer life, which included the gratitude attitude. He chose to obey God rather than men. And he had great faith in God. Hebrews 11:33, it speaks of, by faith, shutting the mouths of lions. The thing is, we all have a lion after us. 1 Peter 5:8. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." Well, I believe that these are the things that can help us to overcome and to shut the mouth of this lion.